He is Carter Carls. I am Tom Noy. And this is the Pot of Gold Extra Point, brought to you by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order at zaxbys.com/podcast. And also brought to you by Tire Rack, the way tire buying should be. This is the Pot of Gold Extra Point bye week, or as I'd like to say, bore week, because we get into a routine covering Notre Dame football Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Sundays are usually off days. And then you get to a bye week and you're like, what do we do? What do we talk about? We can talk about Notre Dame beating USC 30-27 to go to 5-1 halfway through their 2019 schedule. The Irish jumped to a 23 lead against USC. Kind of hold on for at the end there,
yeah,
with Brian Kelly on the field. Brock Wright smothers the onside kick, and the Irish go to a bye week, 5-1. Your thoughts in Notre Dame USC, Mr. Carls?
Yeah, a few thoughts. I mean, I thought
just a few.
Maybe the most positive thing that came out of the game was Tony Jones
again.
Again, I mean, can you believe he's ninth in the nation in yards per carry?
I can't believe anything Tony Jones is doing after what we saw him, like what we saw him do against Louisville in the season opener, run for over 100 yards.
Yeah.
He's the feature back. We're thinking, okay, maybe he's got a chance to be pretty good. But we sat here last week, and I'm sitting here listening to you say how Jafar Armstrong is going to be the main guy, and it's the main storyline. How does Jafar Armstrong do against USC? Oh, by the way, one carry for minus 4 yards, doesn't pick up a blitz, doesn't really play that much.
Tony Jones.
And it's the Tony Jones show.
Tony Jones has not made me look smart this year. three straight 100-yard gains. He had 25 carries, 176 rushing yards. He has broken off runs I don't think a lot of us were expecting at the beginning of the year. Now, he still, Brian Kelly admits it. He doesn't have the 4.3 speed that you'd like, but he just does everything at least pretty well, at least pretty good. He can pass protect. He can run inside, outside the tackles.
He can hold on to the football. He can get the tough yards.
Yeah.
He's the ultimate right now in this offense when, again, all the questions and the focus continue to be on what's going on with Ian Book. Tony Jones Jr. continues to be the ultimate security blanket for Brian Kelly and Chip Long. Like, if they just kind of need to settle down a little bit, let's give the ball to number six, because he's going to just do what we expect him to do out there.
And you have to think that his role will, I don't know if increase is the right word, but like it'll remain pretty heavily involved, even if Jafar Armstrong becomes the 1A back like they wanted him to at the beginning of the year. Because I don't think they wanted to rush him back out there. We didn't really know what we'd expect. I thought he'd do more than he did. But
you were expecting another Dexter Williams episode.
I was.
With Dexter Williams coming back from his 4 games last year, first time he takes the ball, right up the middle, 65 yards, touchdown, yeah. Stanford. Dream season for Dexter Williams. Didn't work out that way right now yet for Jafar Armstrong. Yeah. Maybe it was just trying to play it safe with Jafar Armstrong. Maybe it was he didn't pick up the blitz. He didn't do his assignment correct. He wasn't assignment correct, so he found himself on the bench. And then maybe it was also, let's just get him one touch and then get him even healthier during this bye week.
And I think he came in the second drive, so I think they might have wanted to involve him more, but I think how could you not ride the hot hand? Tony Jones, I mean, hey, if this guy's hot and this guy might have health concerns, you're gonna ride the one that's hot. As for the rest of the offense, I think Ian Book, again, inconsistent, a little underwhelming, but he made enough plays to win the game. That's kind of what matters at the end of the day, but certainly not – like, he hasn't been able to piece together 2 or 3 games together this year where he's looked pretty good. And the same goes for in the games that he has done well, for the most part, he'll look – bad for a quarter, and then it'll be really good for a couple quarters. So you want to see some more consistency in Ian Book.
Here's the biggest number with Ian Book, and I said it earlier this week. You get cut lost in the completion percentage and the passer rating and everything. the guy's lost two games as a starting quarterback at the University of Notre Dame. Okay, I understand that he padded his stats against New Mexico and Bowling Green, where even you and I could look good under center. But he's 5-1 this year, and he's lost two games in his career. Like, yeah. when are people going to be like, we'll just take what we get with Ian Book. Like, this is what Ian Book is. This is what this offense is. It's not going to be this aerial assault, lighting up the scoreboard and running up and down, going up and down the field every time. It's a really good college quarterback playing the most pressure position at the University of Notre Dame, and he's 5-1 this year.
One thing I will say, though, is he's not beating really good teams. He hasn't had many really marquee wins yet as a starter, and that's the one problem. And he won't really the rest of this year besides maybe Michigan. And so I'd like to see him perform. I think he showed a lot against Georgia, but then that went away a little bit when he's struggling in spurts against lower teams. So I want him to be able to prove that he can, you know, play to the level that we think he can against the good teams. I still think there's a lot of production to be had. You look at Chase Claypool, he's got four fewer catches in three of the six games. He's got less than 70 yards in four of the games. I think that Ian Book could do a better job of getting the ball in his playmakers' hands. And I think having Jafar Armstrong back, Michael Young back, Cole Kmet back, that will help balance the offense more, make it more unpredictable. That should help him. Mm-hmm. He should only get better as this season progresses. So I don't think it's over for Ian Book or anything. But
God, I hope not.
Yeah.
I didn't think we were going there today.
No, like, no.
Ian Book, done. Book, chapter. That chapter's closed. Huh? What?
But you wonder sometimes with the consistency issues, is this just kind of going to be what you get from him? Is it going to be up and down for the most part? I still think there's a lot more up to be had, and I think he will get there as the season progresses.
You're listening to the Pot of Gold Extra Point presented by Zaxby's. Let's take a short break.
We know you like football. So do we. We're TireRack.com, and this is our version of a two-minute drill, except it's only 30 seconds. TireRack.com has an enormous selection of tires. Not sure which ones to buy? Use our tire decision guide to find the right tires for your vehicle and the way you drive. Then get them shipped fast and free on all orders over $50. Shipping is in as little as one day. Free. TireRack.com ships to independent, recommended installers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be. Touchdown!
Back on the Pot of Gold Extra Point, presented by Zaxby's with Carter Carls. My name is Tom Noy. We're from the South Bend Tribune. ND Insider talking a little Notre Dame bye week as the Irish sit at 5-1, get through exams, midterm exams this week. They'll be off a class next week in preparation to, go up to Michigan Stadium for another night game, which means another long evening for the ND Insider fellas. You ready for that nice long road trip in the middle of the night, cutting through the Michigan countryside at, let's say about 3 a.m. coming home from Ann Arbor?
I can't
have
complain.
Fun with that.
I can't complain too much because I'm never driving. I'm the one that's annoying the driver, so Eric will probably be the one that will have to suffer.
First question, will you be bringing your pillow on the road trip?
Oh, of course. How could you not?
See, we stick Carter Carls in the back of the van, in the back of the minivan that we rent because it's Eric Hansen and Tyler James up front, myself and probably Michael Katerina, our staff photographer, in the middle, and then the new guy gets to sit in the back. So Carter just puts his pillow, lays on his pillow, puts his headphones in, and he's like, hey, are we home yet? Are we at Waffle House? Like, what's going on? So that's next week. Now it's bye week time. We discussed Notre Dame USC. Notre Dame wins 30-27. Notre Dame 5-1 bye week. So basically, the season's half over. Your biggest takeaway from the first half of the 2019 season would be what?
The media had no idea what they're talking about in August because everything that has happened has been surprising. I don't mean that in a demeaning way, more of a joking way, but the linebackers, what they've been able to do from game one to now, was not expecting that. The special teams has looked pretty crisp. Jonathan Dorr made three free field goals, including a 52-yarder, third longest in school history against USC. So I think maybe the most perplexing unit has been the offense. And I thought, I think,
for myriad reasons, of course.
Yeah. And I think most people in the media would have thought that that would have been the strong suit in this team, whereas the linebacker special teams would have been maybe the concern. So I think there's been a lot of surprises that maybe we didn't predict. I don't think, you know, fans predicted it. I don't think Notre Dame predicted it, so it's not like it's our fault or anything, but I definitely think there was a lot of surprises.
It's always our fault. You know, blame the media.
Exactly.
If something goes wrong with Notre Dame football, it's the media's fault because the media doesn't do this and the media doesn't do
and
that.
When I said that, the look on your face was like, excuse
me? It's like,
me?
Wait a minute, what? I don't know if we were wrong about what this Notre Dame defense was as much as we just didn't know. Like, did we know that three of the top four tacklers, as we sit here at midseason, would be Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, Asmar Bilal, and Drew White, all in new roles, all first-year, basically first-time starters. Asmar Bilal started a different position last year, all starting first-time at different positions this year. You know, we expected Alohi Gilman to do what Alohi Gilman's done six games in being among the leading, being the leading tackler on this team. But those three other guys, especially what we saw down at Louisville on Labor Day night, we were kind of like, uh-oh. Like, if this is what this linebacker group is going to be, Notre Dame is just going to have to go and outscore people this year. They're going to have to put up 40 routinely because they might be giving up 30 points a game. But I think Clark Lee and that group really found their footing as they moved deeper into the schedule. Like, okay, and I loved how Louisville, and you wrote about this after the Louisville game, how they had so many different groupings with the middle linebacker spot, and then Owusu-Koramoah was kind of there at Rover to stay. But I like how they kind of said, all right, let's try this grouping, let's try this pair, and then this pair, and then this pair. And then they kind of settled in and said, all right, we're going forward with Asmar Bilal and Drew White, and the way they've been able to perform, I think that's the highlight of the first half of the season, because there was just such an unknown of, God, you're losing Tavon Coney, you're losing Drew Tranquil. Mm-hmm. Who's going to make all the tackles? And I think now we're sitting here as October hits the midpoint, and you're thinking and you're saying Drew Wright and Asmar Bilal are going to make the tackles needed for this defense to do what this defense is able to do. And offensively, I think offensively, it's just been such an incomplete unit. Once Cole Kmet goes down with a broken collarbone at Culver, and then they lose Jafar Armstrong five plays in, it's been, and then they also lose Michael Young late in preseason camp. So losing those three pieces has kind of been like, okay, what can we do now? If you're Chip Long, it's like, what can we do now? Oh, let's bring Avery Davis back over from defense and give him a couple of flip passes against New Mexico. Maybe Avery Davis is no, he's not the answer. Sebo Flemister scores a touch. Maybe he's not really the answer. So I think the back end of the schedule will really show, hopefully, for Notre Dame, how good this offense can be. And then we see a return of the Ian Book we saw in 2018 rather than the first version that we've seen five, six games into 2019.
MVP of the first half, no question to me, is Clark Lee. What he has been able to do.
This just in, he doesn't play.
He doesn't
He's not a player. He can't be an MVP.
I don't care. He's the most.
I don't care. I'm going that way.
The MVC, the most valuable coach. Mm-hmm. He's the MVC. I mean, I don't know, and this is a topic we might bring up later, but the Broyles Award, you know, the award that goes to the best assistant.
Isn't there a hot cold take
there
question
is.
About that?
There is. We will save that for later, but might be under consideration for that. With the way he's coached, I mean, I can't stress enough, that game one, it wasn't just all August where we saw the linebacker rotation. It was game one where it was, you know, Asmar Bilal wasn't playing aggressive enough. Drew White had some concerns in space. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, he'd make flashes here and there, but it wasn't, you know, every drive. Well, now it's all come together. And then, I think the offense, you have to kind of give them that incomplete grade, because I still feel like Michael Young hasn't been fully ingrained back into the system. I still feel like Jafar Armstrong hasn't been fully ingrained back into the system.
He hasn't done anything.
They don't have Kevin Austin. So,
and they won't.
And so Yeah, there's a lot of incomplete grades there with the offense, I think.
Even Chase Claypool. I'm still waiting for Chase Claypool to have that bust-out game. Like, they get the ball to him. It seems like they get the ball to him early in games, and he'll make one big play, and then for whatever reason, they just kind of get away from him. And you forget about Chase Claypool for two, three, four, five drives, and then he'll go on a crossing route and get like 20, 15, 20 yards. Oh, look, hello, Chase Claypool again. Like, why? I don't understand why they just can't consistently feed him the ball on a drive the way they did with Cole Kmet when we were in Athens, where he had four receptions that first drive. Feed Chase Claypool a little bit more.
Yeah.
So the storyline moving forward, the last six games of the regular season, got to be the offense. Like, where the defense, I think we're pretty well set with. Okay, we know what we're gonna get. God bless you, by the way. That was our producer. If you heard that sneeze, a little chilly in here.
Wasn't me that's sick on. This time.
It's not. He's not the one sneezing. Suppress that sneeze. Look, he's got another one coming too. So we digress. We can digress on the show because it's a bye week. Talk about sneezing. Nah, but defensively, I think we know what we're going to get the last six games of the year. I think the storyline has to be where can this offense go and where is it going the back end of 2019?
We've talked about the exceptional job that Clark Lee's done, but how do you feel like the offensive coordinator Chip Long has done given the injuries and trying to mix things up? How do you think?
It's hard to say because we're not available to – Chip Long's not available to talk to us. So you can't really drill down and really get into, okay, how deep has he been, felt like he's been able to go in his playbook? Does he feel like he's been hamstrung with the injuries to Kmet and Young and Armstrong and Ian Book? Like, Ian Book, how is Ian Book graded out in the offensive coordinator's mind, in the offensive coordinator's room when he's watching film, as opposed to, you know, all you do is the only feedback that we're able to get is the fans saying, oh, it's time for Phil Jurkovec. Ian Book's horrible. He stinks. He's this, he's that. So that's the only feedback we get. Like, what does Chip Long really think? Does he think, man, my quarterback's done a really good job given what he's had to work with? Or does he think, we just have to be better offensively? I would love to for the media to be able to get 15 minutes with Chip Long. That's not going to happen unless Notre Dame goes to a bowl game. So it's hard to say, like, what he thinks, what kind of a job that he's done, because you kind of really need to hear it from him instead of, like, Brian Kelly's never going to throw an assistant under the bus.
No.
He's just never going to be like, our offensive coordinator has no idea what he's doing. I wish he'd just go back to doing this. He's going to say, you know, he's going to be in Chip Long's corner, but I don't know. I don't know what kind of a job it's been. I'd say it's maybe a B+, maybe B minus, but again,
somewhere in the B range.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they're 5-1.
Exactly. I that's a good point about not being able to talk to them. I'd say the one thing that stood out to me, every now and then he'll have a really creative play where, like, they'll pull their guards to the opposite side and they'll do some sort of reverse or fly sweep to the other side.
The reverse to Braden Lindsey. Like, it was there. Chip Long was able to see that and diagnose it and be like, hey, look, if we get the ball to Braden Lindsey, that's going to be a big gainer. And it went for a touchdown. It's like you see just glimpses of that, and then all of a sudden it's been like, then you get another three and out.
Right. I think there's creativity in glimpses, but there's not enough creativity to get the ball in his playmakers' hands. Mm-hmm. Chase Claypool, there should be way more sort of misdirection and creativity involved with getting him the football. He shouldn't be getting five targets, six targets in a game. It should be double digits every single time. Cole Kmet, same thing. And so I do wish that he would be, I guess, maybe more creative throughout the game instead of, okay, time to do the creative play. You know what I mean?
Let's get creative.
It's a little, it's not predictable, but it's like, okay, we know what he's doing when he gets creative. But what can he do for Chase Claypool, Cole Kmet, to get them open and to get them more targets? Because I think they're deserving of that.
That's Notre Dame USC talk. It's Notre Dame offense talk, Notre Dame defense talk. After we take this break, we'll come back and talk a little Notre Dame football recruiting.
Uh-oh.
Right here, you're listening to the Pot of Gold Extra Point presented by Zaxby's. Back on the Pot of Gold Extra Point, presented by Zaxby's. It's recruiting talk time. Okay, biggest game, biggest home game of the year, Notre Dame, USC, night game, rivalry game. What was Carter Carls doing in the afternoon? He was chasing down a commitment. Hello. Welcome to the wonderful world of recruiting where it never sleeps. Notre Dame gets a couple commitments last week. What's going on recruiting-wise now as we sit here on October 18th?
Notre Dame earned a couple commitments from 2 4-star receivers out of the 2021 recruiting class, Deion Colsey and Lorenzo Styles Jr. What stands out to me about these commitments, Deion Colsey goes to school in Athens with Kirby Smart's kids at Georgia. He's got a ton of ties to Georgia. Notre Dame was able to pull him out of there. Lorenzo Styles Jr., his father played as a linebacker at Ohio State. He's from Columbus. He had a scholarship offer from Ohio State, and Notre Dame was able to pluck him out of there. So both of these guys are top 100 overall caliber players in the 2021 recruiting class. Could be 5 stars when it's all said and done. But I think, bare minimum, they really complement each other's games. Deion Colsey, 6'4", 205, that big-bodied outside wide receiver who's going to pull down the 50-50 balls, has a lot of athleticism. And then Lorenzo Styles got a lot of speed to him, 6'1", 170, runs a 4'4", 740. So they're a nice combo, a nice pairing. And I think with how they're recruiting with the 2021 recruiting class, they're the number one recruiting class in the nation on Rivals and 247 Sports.
How about that?
They have recruited the skill positions extremely well over these next two classes. You talk about Michael Mayer, Chris Tyree, Jordan Johnson, and then these two receivers. And then you got Tyler Buchner in the 2021 recruiting class, quarterback out of San Diego, lighting it up. They've done really well at the skill positions.
And let this be a not necessarily a lesson, but an example, especially from the and I get this from the basketball side, where Notre Dame was recruiting a kid in town, Jaden Ivey, went to Marion High School. He'll go to La Lemire School for his senior year because his mother, former Notre Dame assistant coach and basketball player Neil Ivey, is now an assistant coach with the Memphis Grizzlies. But people say, you know, why? How can Notre Dame not recruit Jaden Ivey? You know, he's a local kid. He's from South Bend. Look at these two kids. Deion Colsey's from Athens, Georgia. University of Georgia's right in his backyard. Lorenzo Styles Jr.'s from Columbus, Ohio. Yeah. Ohio State's right down the street. Sometimes kids want to go elsewhere instead of being in the hometown of a certain college. Athens, Georgia, Columbus, Ohio, Ohio State. Same thing with Jaden Ivey. Grew up around Notre Dame. His parents both went to Notre Dame. It's been Notre Dame, Notre Dame, Notre Dame ever since he was a kid. He's going to wind up signing with Purdue next month. But sometimes kids just want to get away from the hometown school if they grow up around it their whole lives. Maybe these two kids are the same way.
True, yeah. I know Lorenzo, when I talked to him, he talked about, I wanted to get out of the state, man. I wanted to get out.
Do something. I wanted to experience something outside of the Ohio State University.
I think the trends with football recruiting for Notre Dame the last few years, I think after the 2016 season, 2015, I think the focus was, let's get the offensive line and defensive line. Let's recruit that like crazy. They did that. They accomplished that. And then they see the Clemson game last year, and the concern is they need speed.
Playmakers. We need
playmakers. They need playmakers, and they are doing that. Chris Tyree runs a 4.35 40. Will Shipley, they're recruiting out of the 2021 class, might land at Notre Dame. And then all the guys they're getting at wide receiver and tight end, they're recruiting exceptionally well. And if they're able to land a couple more guys in the 2021 class, you're talking about two groups, 2020-2021, that could pave the way for something really special.
2020 recruiting class, how many recruits right now, when signing day, and then from now until signing day, what do you expect to any type of movement still with this 2020 class?
Yeah, 17 players committed to the 2020 recruiting class. The last commitment came July 5th in wide receiver Xavier Watts. So been a while, been kind of slow the last couple months. Not a lot of space left in the class, maybe at one or two more spots. So I don't know if there's going to be a ton of movement. Ramon Henderson out of Bakersfield, California, he's kind of the one to watch, the cornerback. took an official visit for September 28th's game against Virginia. He's one that is looking to announce in December, might silently commit soon. Other than that, they might circle back and look at a couple guys. I know Jaden Harrell out of Florida just decommitted from Florida State, the cornerback. So they might look at a couple more guys. The big one to watch as well is Isaiah Pryor, the Ohio State graduate transfer.
Leads me into my next question.
Yeah.
Isaiah Pryor, official visit last week against or during the USC game. You had the story last week for us. News on Isaiah Pryor moving forward. What's going on with him?
Yeah, so this is an intriguing player because he's a high-rated four-star recruit out of the 2017 recruiting class. Started at Ohio State as a sophomore, seven games. Kind of got lost in the depth chart, but still has that pedigree and still has that upside. Notre Dame really likes him and had him on campus last weekend. It's almost a done deal. I mean, Isaiah Pryor, the way...
Ooh, you're going on a limb there.
I'm not
CK.
Going on a limb. I've talked with the Pryors. I've gathered the information on them, and really everything checked the boxes off last week.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to get some answers on academics, how he'd be used in the system. Everything checked out to him. The only thing left is he wants his mom to see campus. He's not looking to visit any other place right now. Nothing scheduled. He wants to bring his mom up to Notre Dame. Probably make a commitment on that weekend. Three more home games, so you're looking at November 2nd against Virginia Tech or maybe the Boston College or Navy game. But I think once he comes back up to campus, that's when it'll be official.
Okay, now we dive into your segment of hot take, cold take. Explain for the listeners what hot take, cold take is, because I still seem like I feel like I have it backwards. Like a hot take is something you want. Cold take is something you don't want, but that's not how you have it laid out. What is hot take, cold take?
Well, it is.
Yeah.
So there are different meanings for it. Like when I feel like hot take is usually considered positive, but it's not, because a hot take is a unpopular opinion. A cold take is like, duh, like that's Captain Obvious. And so people like saying hot takes because it makes them unique.
Right.
But in a general sense, it's negative because you're the only one that thinks that.
Okay, so in this version of it,
yes,
we're run far, far away from the hot take.
Yes.
And run really close and get the cold take.
Yeah.
You got that? Everybody got that?
We'll see what fans think about this. If you don't like it, tweet at us. Tell us we're stupid.
No. Tweet at him. Tweet at Carter Carls. This is his game. This is his segment. What's the first hot take, cold take question?
All right.
Let's go.
Quarterback Ian Book will never take his game to the next level. But what I mean by that, he'll never be consistent. He'll never be that elite quarterback we thought he would be. Hot or cold?
I'm taking it's absolutely positively sizzling hot right now. And yeah, the operative word there is never. Never say never. You can't say never. Like, wasn't Trevor Lawrence supposed to be the second coming of Peyton Manning last year? Trevor Lawrence isn't having that great of a season right
Very
now
true.
For Clemson.
Yeah.
I know Clemson's still undefeated, but they haven't looked impressive. I think a lot of the stuff that's being said up north about Ian Book is saying down south in South Carolina about Trevor Lawrence, where this is like quarterbacks are going to go through the roller coasters of being really, really good or being average and then being really, really not so good. So this is about as hot a take as you can have as far as Ian Book, because does Ian Book still give this Notre Dame team the best chance to win next week against Michigan and then moving forward all the way through Stanford? Absolutely.
Again, offense incomplete grade.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen all the guys there. And next year, I think there's going to be some weapons added. And I think Jordan Johnson, Michael Mayer, Chris Tyree are guys that will see the field immediately.
Wow, three freshmen impact
players. Three freshmen, all skill positions. They're recruiting that well at the skill positions. So,
and don't forget whatever happens. Like, we're not – it's a pretty good chance we're not seeing Kevin Austin this year. Like, he's not going to play. So – they'll add Kevin Austin to that mix. We'll see what happens.
Kevin Austin. All their offensive line might come back. Jafar Armstrong comes back. Cole Kmet, probably not.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one.
But for the most part, Ian Book's going to have everyone back and more next year. So, yeah, never say never. Number two for you, Tom Noy. Tony Jones Jr. will outproduce Jafar Armstrong by a wide margin against Michigan, hot or cold.
See, you have that one operative word in there. And for the Ian Book one, it was never that I was taking this hot, sizzling take. And this one, it's wide margin. Mm-hmm. I'll take it as a hot take. I think Jafar Armstrong, now he may not be the back, the feature back this week, but until we hear from Brian Kelly as to what his plan for Jafar Armstrong is, and Brian Kelly won't meet with the media again until Monday of game week, like, is Jafar Armstrong more going to be more of a factor in the game plan? If Brian Kelly says yes, then I think Jafar Armstrong closes that gap with Tony Jones. If he says he had a setback, he's not really confident in after rehabbing the injury, he's not really confident to cut it loose yet, then I'll say, yeah, it's going to be Tony Jones' show. But I think Jafar Armstrong closes that gap on Tony Jones as far as running back production between USC and Michigan.
Yeah, I'll go a little lukewarm to hot. I just think it's one of those things where, and maybe I should have thought this last week, once he does it, I will be convinced, right? Like, we don't know.
Meaning Jafar Armstrong. Once he's able to 9 carries for 78 yards or something.
Yeah. Once he does it, yeah. Because, I mean, Michael Young, he hasn't been this world beater coming back. And I know Jafar Armstrong maybe has more talent than him, but I'm just saying, like, you never know how you come back off these injuries. Might take a few weeks to really get settled in. I think the bye week helps him. Number three, defensive coordinator Clark Lea is in line for Broyles Award consideration this year, hot or cold?
I'll go cold on this one. As long as Notre Dame stays in the top 10 and is on track for, by the way, the record that only I predicted among us ND insiders.
That's true.
11-1, baby. Right on track. They go 11-1. They stay in the top 10. I think Clark Lea is definitely in line for some major assistant coaching awards nationally, given what they lost off this defense, where this program was in going to the college football playoff last December against Clemson, and then coming back and doing it again and going 11-1. Maybe that's not going to get him to the playoff, but I think it'll elevate the status of Clark Lea. Like, that's a guy that they've got to keep an eye on right there.
I think he's closer to cold, but I'm going to go somewhat lukewarm.
You're going lukewarm again. You got to pick one. Cold, baby.
You gotta be
it's
lukewarm.
Not hot, cold, or lukewarm.
Well, I just think I think the people that cover Notre Dame will recognize that, wow, the job that he's done with this defense this year is incredible. But he's not going to put up these crazy elite numbers that people that are, you know, maybe national media will look at it and think, wow, across the board. And he's not this splashy name that everyone knows yet. Whereas you look at what LSU's done with Joe Brady, their pass game coordinator, Alex Grinch at OU, those two guys, you're hearing their names a lot. Bruce Feldman with The Athletic actually released a top 10 for Broyles Award. Clark Lea did not make that list. I think he should be in that consideration. I just don't know if he's going to get that recognition because people may not know him as much yet, or maybe he's not putting up the flashy numbers or has the big name like Alex Grinch or something.
Or that he even talks to the media.
True.
How about that? See? It would elevate him if we were able to talk. We're not allowed to talk to this. I mean, I would say we're not allowed. I think the assistants aren't allowed to talk to us, big bad media members, which is why we can't ask Chip Long about the offense, which is why we can't ask Clark Lea about the defense, and we can't ask Brian Polian about the special teams, because only Brian Kelly talks to us. Lucky him.
Precisely. Oregon has a better chance to make the college football playoff. They have one loss, season opener to Auburn. They'll have a conference championship to play for. They have a better chance at making college football playoff than Notre Dame, hot or cold?
Again, hot. I think they're right there with Notre Dame, and there's really nothing that Oregon, with the one loss this year, but I think there's nothing that's really going to separate Oregon. Even if they go on and win the Pac-12 championship, I think the Pac-12, out of all the conference championships, I think nationally, I think the Pac-12 is looked at as like the bottom feeder of the conference championships. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares? You won the Pac-12 championship. Don't they play that at Levi Stadium? Or they played it last year, Levi Stadium, yeah, in Santa Clara, and there were like 5,000 people there.
There was 10 people there.
There were. Seriously, there was nobody there. And you know, you kind of, after the season's over, you're kind of decompressing and you're flipping through the channels, and I'll come across the Pac-12 championship, and there'll be 10 people, like you said, there'll be 10 people in the stands.
Yeah.
So Oregon can run the table. They can finish with one loss. They can win the Pac-12 championship. But I think nationally, it's not going to move the meter, because everybody's going to be focused on what's going on in the SEC, what's going on in the Big Ten, what's going on, obviously, with Notre Dame, what's going on with Oklahoma. Is Oklahoma going to win the Big 12? So Oregon, yeah, they've got a nice flashy uniform combinations and this, mm-hmm, and that, but not a college football playoff.
Yeah, I think Georgia's a better loss than Auburn. It's kind of silly to say, oh, who has the better loss? But
I think it is, because it was on a neutral field. The Auburn Oregon game was at, yeah, AT&T Stadium, right?
Correct.
Neutral,
yeah,
field.
And I think Georgia's a better team than Auburn, even with what we saw last week. So yeah, I think
they just decided, yeah, I think we're going to take the South Carolina game off. Yeah. We don't have to show up.
It's difficult because, you know, how many. I don't know if Georgia, or I don't know if Notre Dame or Oregon will have a ranked win after this season.
Mm-hmm.
I think Notre Dame has really, you know, with Virginia not playing as well, that's really screwed over Notre Dame, not having a marquee win.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'll give you another one. How about Michigan? Do they have a better chance than Notre Dame?
No.
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 If they win out, they have a better chance, but them winning out... Penn State, Ohio State, that's
yeah,
not happening.
Go to Penn State and win. Come, yeah, back, beat Notre Dame under
it's
the lights
happening
of Michigan Stadium, and then beat Ohio State, and then win the Big Ten championship.
No.
No, not happening.
No way.
Sorry.
Yeah, so it's interesting to look at. I think Notre Dame's college football playoff chances at this point, with Georgia losing, I think what they were hoping for was Georgia to go run the table, go, mm-hmm, undefeated, be the number one team in the nation, and then say, hey, lost to the number one team in the nation on the road without these key pieces by like a score. And I think now because that's out of the picture, they need to hope for chaos.
It's got to be utter chaos for Notre Dame to get back into it.
Oh, yeah. They need a lot of teams to lose.
Alabama's got to lose. Ohio State's got to lose. LSU's got to lose. Clemson's got to lose. And not just once. Like, a couple of those teams might have to lose two, and then Notre Dame run the, yeah, table and finish at 11-1 to get back into consideration. But if the status quo remains, there's really no chance for Notre Dame. And they know that. Like, they know it's national championship or bust, yeah, there, because they can't fall back and say, well, we lost to Georgia, but we'll get back into the race and get back into the picture for our conference championship game, because they're independent. They don't play a conference championship game.
Correct. Yeah, I think the projections right now are Cotton Bowl, Orange Bowl, but
you're rooting for the Cotton Bowl, aren't you?
I am. Clemson, if they lose one game, I think Notre Dame might leapfrog them.
Maybe.
Because their schedule, I would say, is worse than Notre Dame's.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Notre Dame's win over Michigan would be way better than any of Clemson's wins in the ACC. But one more hot or cold for you.
One more? You got two on the list.
I got one more.
Oh, only one, huh? You're skipping one?
I'm skipping one. Pineapple.
You're skipping Jonathan Dorr?
Okay, fine. I'll give you that one.
Come on, give us. It's a bye week.
Okay.
We can talk. We got nowhere to go, right? Producer's giving me the evil eye. We'll be quick on these.
Everyone in the media was wrong about Jonathan Dorr, and we should all be ashamed of ourselves. Hot or cold? I wasn't going to put you under the bus like that, but
no,
here we go.
We'll throw us under the bus. It doesn't matter. I'm going to go hot, unbelievably hot, because I don't know if we were wrong about Jonathan Dorr as much as we just had no idea,
yeah,
what Jonathan Dorr was all about. And we still don't, because we don't get to talk to Jonathan Dorr. Oh, sorry. Did I say that out loud?
It's been a common theme this podcast.
Yeah. Did I say that out loud? I'm sorry. But no, And I think this is the only reference point that I have for Jonathan Dorr is Justin Yoon was out nursing an injury. Tyler James and I were at we're in San Diego at whatever stadium they call it now, SD, you know, the former Qualcomm Stadium. Here comes Jonathan Dorr to kick an extra point. His first chance as the kicker with Justin Yoon out, and he shanks it.
Yeah.
Like, that was, I don't think any of us had a reference point as to, all right, we watched Jonathan Dorr kick in spring. We watched him kick in preseason. But until he was able to do it in pressure situations, which is what he did with the three kicks against USC, I don't think any of us knew what Jonathan Dorr was all about. And did he prove something? Did we look at Jonathan Dorr and say, all right, now he's in the club. Now he's in the club. Like he can deliver if he needs to deliver. He joined the club last week. Until then, it was like, yeah. I have no idea who Jonathan Dorr is all about as a kicker.
Him and Harrison Leonard, the walk-on freshman, they were in a back-and-forth competition. We were at the practices. They'd have Leonard and Dorr go, you know, 1-1-1-1-1 with kicks. It was 50-50 for really until a couple weeks before the season. And so, and then you saw in the spring, there was no confidence in the spring. A lot of his kicks would slice one direction. He would make a field goal from 30 yards, and you'd say, oh, wow, okay, well, he would make that distance from a long way. And then you back it up to 45-50, and he would miss it by 10 yards. It seemed like a mental issue for him. He was mishitting balls. He had this slice that he was working with. So the athleticism, the leg has always been there. He's got a very strong leg. You saw that in the 52-yarder he made. Now that he's got the confidence. We saw Kyle Brinza tweet about it, how Notre Dame really put him in the right situation to gain that confidence. I think the sky's the limit for him now. My last one for you,
we'll
Tom.
We'll end on a good note.
Or a bad note, depending on what you say. Pineapple goes well on pizza. Hot or cold?
I'll take it as cold because it's still pizza at the end of the day. Like I'm not ordering a pizza, and I got Carter shaking his head at me as I'm talking over here. So I'm not ordering a pizza and saying, and when they say, okay, what would you like on it? And the first response out of me is pineapple. You know, I'm a sausage, tomato, spinach. That's it. But if somebody says, hey, I think we always circle back around to this. When we were looking for a place to eat, what time was it? 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah. coming back to the hotel from Louisville. And if the only place that was open at that time was a place that served pineapple on pizza, I'm knocking down that pizza.
Oh man!
Like I'm on. There's no question. Oh yeah.
I'd rather eat gum.
Really? Really? Come on! It's still pizza. It's not. And how much pineapple are you putting on that pizza? Is it just overloaded with pineapple? If that's the case, then it's going to be a hot take. But if there's sausage and there's tomato on it, oh, there's some slices of pineapple, I'm taking it.
I'm not a big pineapple fan in general, so maybe that clouds my judgment.
Yeah, it does.
But, I mean, I like apples. Would I put that on pizza? No. I like grapes. Would I put
like
that on
them
pizza?
Apples.
No. Like, you don't put fruit on pizza. That's disgusting. Like, what other fruit? Would you put a banana on pizza? No, that's disgusting. Like, what horrible person decided that pineapple goes well on pizza, and now you go to these parties, you go to these get-togethers, and people are like, oh, well, we got pineapple and ham on this pizza. Like,
not ham.
What?
No ham.
Well, that's usually what it goes with, right?
No, put sausage, tomato, and grilled pineapple.
Disgusting.
Grilled pineapple. It's got the grill marks on it. That's good eating right there.
I like grilled pineapple a little bit. It's better than regular, but on pizza, we're going to have to agree to disagree.
That's okay. That's fine. And okay, other than the fact that I'm bringing like six pineapples in the car next week when we go out to Michigan. Real quick, your top storyline that you're looking forward to when Notre Dame gets back in action a week from Saturday in Ann Arbor in front of 105,000 plus under the lights at Michigan Stadium. Top storyline is what?
It's going to continue to be Ian Book in this offense. Mm-hmm. Will Jafar Armstrong be fully ingrained? Will Ian Book benefit from having all these pieces back? Will we finally see him establish consistency? He's going to be facing a really good defensive coordinator in Don Brown, a pass efficiency defense at Michigan that's forced some turnovers and makes things difficult. So Ian Book, I want to see him piece together a complete game.
And real quick, how are you going to spend your bye Saturday?
Boy, well, Friday tonight, I'm going to go see Jim Gaffigan.
That's right. You guys are going to see Jim Gaffigan. That's it all makes
Hot
sense
pockets.
Now. It all makes sense now. Eric Hansen can't host radio at 5 o'clock, and I'm stepping in for Eric Hansen doing radio. Oh. So Eric Hansen, Tyler James, Carter Carls, all making the trek to Chicago to see Jim Gaffigan. That's on Friday, though. You got all day Saturday. You're just going to lay around and just do absolutely nothing but watch games.
The best part about the bye week and being off, like every Sunday, I am the most lazy person on earth. It's just sit on the couch, watch football, get Uber Eats, or maybe crawl out of bed and get some food.
You can't even go out and get your own food. You're having Uber bring you food. That is the ultimate definition of lazy.
That's what football season's about. I love being lazy. You just watch football. By the end of the day, you got a headache because you're like, oh, I've been watching the TV all day. That is how football season is meant to be.
Okay, so you're watching football all day Saturday. I will be writing a Notre Dame men's basketball column. Basketball season starts in earnest next week.
It is.
Yeah, it's basketball season.
Any big predictions?
No, too early. It's too early. Like, NCAA tournament? No, not yet. Not going there. Top six in the ACC? Not going there yet. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting. We'll put it that way. Remember, they're coming off the mat from 3-15 in the ACC, and I'm saying they'll be fortunate enough to get to 10-10 in the league. And I've already had people say, "Why set the bar so low? 10-10? Why are you setting the bar at average?" I'm not setting the bar at average, people. I'm setting the bar at they're going to win 7 more league games than what they won last year.
A lot better than 3-15.
That's a huge jump to go from 3 wins in the league to 10 wins in the league, given what the league is all about and given what the type of schedule that Notre Dame has to play. Because in less than 3 weeks, I'll be sitting at the Smith Center in Chapel Hill watching Notre Dame go against North Carolina in the season opener.
Yeah.
And doing the podcast from North Carolina. We'll see how that rolls out.
I enjoyed your column. I read it this morning about the team. I think it's good that they feel like they have more maturity. They've mm-hmm. got more leadership, whereas last year,
it was
not there. So if you want to check out that column, you can go to IndyInsider.com and look at Tom Noy's column.
Here's the $5 I'm going to send you over for stumping for me. We'll be back next week for the Pot of Gold Extra Point. We'll talk about Notre Dame, talk about Michigan. Maybe we'll have some hot, cold takes on Jim Harbaugh and maybe whether or not he's the right man for the job.
Or lukewarm takes.
Oh, that's not a lukewarm take. That's a hot take. He's a train wreck. I'm not going to go Tyrone Willingham to draw the comparison between Jim Harbaugh and Tyrone Willingham. But, man, Jim Harbaugh, how about winning a big game once in a while? Can you, please? So, the Pot of Gold Extra Point is brought to you by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order at zaxby's.com/podcast. And brought to you by Tire Rack, the way tire buying should be.